The I League is still on, and there are a few more matches, a title still to be decided. And might as well know that who ends up winning the title could be Trau FC becoming the first team from Northeast United. First team from Northeast.
First team from Northeast United. Corrupted.
This is what happens when there people go on rant. I just get confused. Okay.
You went on rant. Nobody else.
Hey, listener, and welcome to another episode of Injury Time, your one-stop shop for everything on Indian football. Well, the ISL season might be done. Congratulations, Mumbai City FC, on your double. But the I-League season is still on, and there are some more matches remaining in that, and we'll be talking about it in our further episodes. But today, it's all about you, the listener, the questions that you have sent us on our social media handles, and we are here to answer every single one of them. Well, I'm Naveen, and helping me do this episode are our usual faces. Sandeep, the man behind this movement. Hey, Sandeep.
Hello.
Hi, and Akash, who I think has had one or two shots of caffeine already, which is helping me stay past midnight. Hello, Akash.
Yeah, I couldn't rely on this discussion and you guys to keep me awake.
Well, you're in for some surprise there, I assure you that. And also joining us is Shlok, who's still, I'm pretty sure, reeling under the excitement of his team finally winning the ISL. Right, Shlok?
Yes, not taking shit from any other clubs now. Khatam, like.
Yeah, that's the Mumbai Karan Shlok talking to you. Guys, yeah. Like I said earlier, this episode is all about answering the question that our listeners have posted. So without wasting much of our time, let's just start right away, right? First up, we have a question from one of our listeners, Roy Arana. And the first one, Sandeep, is this one's for you because he wants to know more about the new Bengaluru FC that we'll be seeing starting from the AFC Cup playoffs. His question is, what is your assessment of the new BFC coach, Marco Perzaioli? How did he come across in your first interview with him?
First of all, congratulations for saying that name correctly. Because this is the man who once called Trau Taru.
That just me thinks.
Yeah. So anyway, the first media interaction was good. He came across as someone who says a lot of the right things in the sense that he likes to play attacking football, press from the front, you know, all those kind of... there was a lot of questions about gegenpressing and all, which I think is a little far-fetched to play in India. But anyway, he'll play on the front foot. He wants to have the ball most of the time. He's not a reactive sort of manager. He doesn't want to do long balls. He wants to create situation through quick passing and especially in transition. So these are some of the things that we took away from him or his idea that he wants to instill in BFC. He's also called up a few younger names, Jagdeep Singh, Ashir Shakti, who have all been doing quite well in the BDFA Super Division. Four of them made it to the early training sessions with him. And he seems keen on adding players from the youth system and even buying young players from other clubs as well to add to the team. But having said that, he's only looking to find players who's going to add things to a BFC squad and not just another body that they can have in the team. So it'll be interesting what kind of player and, you know, what profile he goes for. And to see whether, I don't know, with Dimas and Eric and everyone, if they can continue to play a, you know, high press game. So some changes might be coming in that sense, I feel.
Well, Shlok, let me ask you this regarding BFC. Ever since the club was formed in 2013, if I'm not wrong, and then their entry into the ISL in the 2017-18 season, this team has been a standard bearer of certain stature, right, in Indian football.
Right.
Last season, we saw them go through a first real slump, if I may say so. How do you see this team come out of this?
Certainly, it's going to be tough for them now because, again, financially, you have two powerhouses now, Mumbai and ATKMB. SC East Bengal, again, I don't know what's exactly going on with them, but it seems like, you know, their sponsors or investors are richer than what BFC have. And as I've always said before, BFC are going to have to tough it out. I don't think it's going to be an immediate bang wherein next year they can come back so quickly. It's going to be 2 or 3 years of figuring out you know, which young players they want to groom and figuring out what their philosophy is going to be. Because again, we'd seen that article earlier on the money they'd spent on Miku and how they drastically cut it down and have essentially spent it on four different forwards now. So they won't be able to get a player of Miku's stature with that amount of money. I think they'll have to do like a lot more smart scouting on foreigners as well as Indians. So there'll be a large shift in philosophy that way. So I think it'll take them some more time to just come to terms with that.
I think there will be a situation. So this Miku thing, right? It's very curious because if you look at the history of that club, they've never been one of the highest spending clubs in that when they were in I-League especially. But they will always get the right players and have a player, like say, first season they had Naveen Kumar, I want to say is the goalkeeper's name. Then very next, after they won the title, they bought Moya. And the year after, they bought Amrinder. And they kept the other goalkeeper in the team just to ensure that, you know, they are pushing each other. And the same happened with Keegan Pereira and Fanai Chuante, who they got. Right back in Reno. And I think Vishal was there in the beginning. In the midfield also, they bought Eugene. In the wing, they had Semelin Dungal, who came in after Udanta came in. Then Beko was out and Malim was out. You know, Toy Singh was there and Eugene came. So they always had this in the early years, a philosophy of getting another player who's going to push the team forward. I think that's the one they have to, you know, reverse, go back to. Because Miku being there at that time, this dramatically changed the whole concept of how BFC worked. And subsequently, I think they also want to make a splash entering into a, you know, ISL with a lot more eyeballs on them. They wanted to make a statement that, you know, we are the best in India and we can continue to easily transition and things of that nature, which they successfully showed. And I think since then, they have sort of tried to hold on to that, but without spending as much money. And there is also no competition. Like, it's very strange, right? You buy someone like Ashiq Kurnian for that amount of money. And then the moment I saw, I was like, okay, he's going to either compete with Sunil or he's going to compete with Udanta for a place because the number nine is generally a striker. So yeah, this is how it's going to be. And they made him into a left back. Whether that's the coach's decision or the management decision, I don't know. Maybe it's the coach only. But the whole point was to push the other guy and they never pitted him against. And there are some players who are there who are quite comfortable. They know they are the first choice player. And that I don't think is great for a team when they are trying to catch up to really, really rich teams. Plus, almost every other team who can spend as much as them. East Bengal can do that. Kerala Blasters can do that. All of them may not spend wisely, but they can spend just as an equal amount of money.
Well, Football Baba, how do you look at this? Other teams in the ISL now can spend, if not more, at least as much as BFC can. How do you see them coming back to where they were?
So, interestingly, first of all, Shlok was talking about that article. It was a Khel Now article. We should give credit before sort of you get a copyright violation. But
Negi is a friend.
So I know why it's a pod shot at Ashish Negi. But so when we say it's the first slump for BFC, right? It's technically it's not. You know what? In the 2016 and 2017 season, when they finished fourth in the I-League, this was their problem. It was the same problem that they did not have a good foreign striker, and that was to be blamed at the recruitment rather than Albert Roca at that time, because BFC played fairly well. There was for a club with a misfiring striker, BFC did fairly well. I'm talking about the season where Aizawl won, right? And they had the same problem. And this was solved after the next season when they joined ISL and they got Miku. I think it was the first season, right?
Yes. But,
so I'm just saying it's actually a matter of, it could be a matter of just signing a couple of great players who come off really well. Mm-hmm. And it could transform BFC. I still think they have good enough Indian players. Mm-hmm. And obviously they've lost their advantage because if this rule of 3+1 would have come about 2 years ago, they would have had the best Indian players in their lineups, right? But right now they don't. So it might not work out for them from an Indian point of view right now. But I think they still have good enough players, and if they can complement it with some masterstroke signings, I understand they don't have the budget and they'll never have the budget in the near future, I feel. just to sort of bring up that point, it was Miku made a lot of difference, and that one or two strikers make a lot of difference. And I remember from that season in 2017 I League, that was the difference between Bengaluru FC winning it and finishing fourth. They could not. They were pretty good at the start and the end of the season, but the time they started misfiring was when they couldn't find goals. And I think they were only two clubs who had their top scorer as an Indian top scorer. Obviously, it was Chhetri in this case, but there were only two clubs, and that was not a good sign. Like, I know it should be a good sign, but that actually backfired on Bengaluru FC in 2017. So I think this is a repeat of that slump, and they can come out of it. But let's see, it depends a lot. It's a huge gamble signing a foreign player, but also utilizing him. Sandeep is also right. Right now, Brown is firing. Onwu was firing after leaving BFC. Then they need to sort of change their philosophy a little. They need to be a more, I think they have the players to play a more attractive style of football. It's only sort of handcuffing them if they don't.
Well, Sandeep, Football Baba, they spoke about the 16-17 season a year before they actually entered ISL and then started competing in the ISL. The 16-17 season is a time, if I'm not wrong, we saw Roka for the first time in India in a league. And also the season where they ended up playing the AFC Cup final. Will you call that a poor season?
So the I-League season was actually the next season. AFC Cup run was the year, I mean, sort of like the between these two, because the Indian calendar is not, you know, it's not aligned with the Asian calendar, right?
Right.
So if you look at the run they had in the Asian Cup, people may not think I don't know the right word. They may think I'm ragging on Roka, but when he took over a team that was a champion team of India, and that was a team that was already in the quarterfinal, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Ashley had left him.
Right.
So then there was only the quarterfinal and the semifinal, which is still an amazing achievement. But that was a great team that he had over there. And then what happened is two matches against a team. Like Tampines Rovers, the first leg when I think you and I were both there watching the game.
Right.
That game could have gone either way had CK Vinit not, you know, scored. Yeah, but CK was at his prime then. So
right.
You would expect those things from him.
Hmm.
And then like Carlis has spoken about this too in the podcast with the away leg and see what they can do, if they can nick the goal in the home leg and things. So having said that, they played Johar out of the park. But Eugene scored a worldie in the first leg.
Right.
In the first leg, you know. Yeah, that away goal carries a lot of weight. So a lot of things worked in their favor also, because they had players who were doing exceptionally well. But then once it came to a season where you had to play week in, week out, Eugene was no longer the midfielder that we saw him as. He was played often wide left or wide right. They bought Lenny in, and they had a problem with the striker, whether it's Norales or Colonel Glenn also was there for a period of time, I think. So all these kept on changing. Daniel was never going to be a 10-goal striker. So they missed consistent goal scoring, because Sunil will get you there, but you need someone to help him. Like Sunil is like an extra foreign player you have. He's like a Brandon and Sunil. They are two players I always think of as. It feels like these clubs have an extra foreigner because of how good these two are. But he needs somebody to score goals. And that's the interesting thing, right? They succeeded with Miku. There is a bunch of players who did not succeed. And then when you look at it, last season we heard rumors. Koro, Ogbeche apparently was interested to move to Bangalore because he liked the city. I don't know if the Bangalore had any contact with them directly. There were murmurs of Aridane Santana also being someone of the target who Carles had openly said someone like him will make a big difference the year before. And then they opted for, you know, somebody else. But the thing is, like, maybe there is something that we want to find the next Miku, an attitude like that. Because Pradyum in the season review was saying the same thing. Because when you have proven goal scorers in the league, who have succeeded in the league, who you can potentially sign, why would you gamble if you are not 100% certain? Like Miku was a certainty. He played for Venezuela. Then that's to play for a South American national team is not an easy job. So he was a certain, 100% success. But very few otherwise are. Like Manuel Onwu or whoever they signed, Christian Upset, or the one before and one in between, Deshaun Brown, all these guys may or may not be successful. So why would you not take a gamble at the surefire thing? So we have to see. There's a lot of questions in the recruitment. We have to see if they can get it right, because the new coach has come. He has his own philosophy. If they want to play the way he wants to play, they need to get him the players that he needs, which is again what happened with Roka. When they got Dimas and Eric and Edu Garcia and Miku and all of them came together, they suddenly became very, very good. The year before that, they didn't have the personnel to play the kind of football Roka wanted to play. So this will all be a key factor as the season goes on. We have to see how they are going to develop as a team.
Well, Shlok, coming to you, Sandeep spoke about how this new coach will need the kind of players he wants that suits his philosophy to play his style of football. That means the team will have to end up spending a lot. But given the budget, given the constraints that Indian football has today, and given that other teams in the ISL today has an equal amount of spending strength, can they compete? Can BFC compete?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen like quite a few recruitments, foreign recruitments, if you're speaking, that have come in on a budget and they've performed pretty well, actually. So it's more about that. But mainly what I wanted to ask both Akash and Sandeep was, what do you all think about Clayton? Because in my opinion, he seems like a fairly creative player. He's been performing better than both Onwu and Brown for BFC. And I still feel he can do a lot more if used maybe a bit better. So I just wanted to defer to them. As in, do you think he's going to continue next season? Or can you see him being part of the new BFC where you're looking at pressing? But also when we're talking about, you know, having a creative presence to support Chetri and Udanta.
Well, Baba, do you want to take that?
Oh, I want to take the earlier one. I think Sandeep is taking too much credit away from Roka. It's not like, I mean, we saw Bengaluru playing a very different style, and probably because of style of keeping possession, which Westwood didn't always do. There was a lot of pragmatism. But when Roka implemented a possession-based style, it you started playing with the ball, right? Which meant the other team wasn't playing with the ball. And that's always a problem. That was always a weakness for an Indian team. But also because Sunil Chetri was at his peak. So he was like a foreign striker then. And also the 3+1 rule where you have just four foreigners and you're relying on Indians, and BFC's Indians were pretty good at that time. I think Udanta didn't even start the final. Nishu was there. I think Reno Anto was there. And John Johnson and Juanan was the defensive pairing, which was as solid as anything in the AFC Cup or in Asian football at that moment. And Cameron Watson was also there at that time. And he was a brilliant player back then. But also players like CK Vineet were on fire. And, you know, so that squad was a champion squad. But also, I think Roka took it to the next level at that time. In the I-League, it's a different ballgame for various reasons. I mean, for example, I'll tell you the one match I really want to watch again. I don't know how to do that. There was an East Bengal versus Bengaluru FC match in Calcutta, and not in Salt Lake, some other ground. I forgot the name. And for 20 minutes, I have not seen an away performance better than that from any club in the last 5-6 years I've watched so closely. It was exceptional. Bengaluru FC was like they blew East Bengal off the park. And at that point, Mehtaab Singh decided, screw this, I'm going to kick players. And when he started doing that, the game completely changed. And that told me about how BFC was. BFC was probably a side which was meant for AFC competition, where, you know, you can play that sanitized football. But when it came to the I-League, when players were kicking the opponents, when they were getting into rough tactics, and BFC had to fly to an Aizawl and a Shillong and all that, and a complete change of environment and different playing styles, they sort of struggled. Where they were relying on a foreign striker brilliance, that didn't come. So I just wanted to add, I wouldn't take away that credit from Roka. I think he did really well. But I also think I-League was a completely different proposition. At that point, the I-League was pretty strong as well. The ISL and I-League weren't running simultaneously. So all the good players were there as well. So I'm just to add that. The last question was?
Thoughts on Clayton.
Clayton is... I really enjoyed Clayton's game. I think BFC couldn't find him a... Like, he needs a... He's not a full-blown striker. He needs somebody else. Or he needs somebody to provide him a service. But I think he's better off in a number 10 role, or just as a secondary striker. He's really good at his creativity. And I hope he's still at BFC, or he still remains at BFC, because he looks like a really good talent. I quite enjoyed his play, actually. He's probably the best Bengaluru FC player of the season, right?
Well, Clayton there for you guys. We move on to the next question. This is again coming to you, Sandeep, because it's about KSFA, the BDFA league, the super division that you were covering a few weeks ago, which Bengaluru and United end up winning, beating Bengaluru FC reserve side or the B team. The question is again from Roy Aran, his second question for us. Are the bans that the KSFA handed out to the players after the fight that broke out following that match between Bengaluru United and Bengaluru FC valid only for the state level matches, or is it valid across the domestic circuit in the country? And the reason why he asked this question is because he's seen Jagdeep Singh, one of the players who is handed out this ban, being called up by BFC for training ahead of their AFC Cup playoff match.
Yeah, so this is actually a little complicated to answer, because most of the KSFA officials did not know. They just sort of gave the dikkat and just sort of moved away from it. And while you're trying to find out, one of the former FIFA referees is someone who finally gave me the answer to this. Since they banned him for months and not matches, so let's say they banned him for 5 matches, it would have been under the jurisdictions of BDFA. But since he's banned for 3 months or 6 months, depending on who you're talking about, they will not be eligible to play in any tournaments in India. So that means like him, I also saw Jagdeep Singh as one of the players that was called up. I don't think he'll be eligible to play in the AFC Cup if he is selected for it, which is still a big if. But yeah, it's a proper ban. So won't be playing any of this. But by the way, interesting anecdote. So BFC were fined altogether 80,000 rupees for 4 different offenses from 4 different people. Mm-hmm. And they finished second and won 50,000 rupees back from the media.
Good.
So if they had actually won that whole tournament, they would have got 1.5 lakh.
Okay. So, now they owe BDFA 30 grand more.
Yeah, I mean, 80,000 rupees for a club like BFC is actually peanuts. So
yeah, true.
It's not that bad. But especially, it's just to add that the fact that BDFA took a stand was something good to see, because they wanted to make an example that even a big club cannot take them for a ride. Like, they have to abide by the rules. So that's specifically why they went and banned 4 people. Or different divisions.
Well, what this also shows is what Akash has mentioned in the pod in the past, that problems with players not treating referees with respect at the domestic, at an ISL level or an I-League level, it starts from here. Like, the infestation starts from your domestic circuit, and BDFA coming ahead and giving out these bans and fines could somewhat set a precedent for players to like start treating people on the pitch when they play with equal amount of respect that they expect from the others, right? Football Baba?
Yeah, I've been saying it for a while. I mean, you can't really, like, everything starts on the bottom. I remember saying this as well about refereeing decisions, right? In the I-League, the refereeing decisions have been horrendous at times, but they get flown under the radar, or the same decisions happen in the ISL and it gets like, oh my God, what is happening? Like, when the decisions go wrong in the I-League, even the refereeing reports don't have that decision. Like, the refereeing reports is where the referees are rated and judged. That incident isn't mentioned. There are some ridiculous penalty calls that are not given in the I-League, which are so obvious that it's unbelievable that they were not given. And eventually they're going to happen again and again in the ISL. So, I mean, the accountability always starts on the bottom, but in Indian football, we don't know how to do things from the bottom, right? We don't know how to build systems from the bottom up. Hum to top pe directly karenge.
Top-down approach
either. It goes for referees, it goes for age fraud, it goes for baby leagues. I mean, to start people early, players today started playing at the age of 12 when they're supposed to start at the age of 5 or 7. But we don't know how to do things from the bottom, right? So this is always going to happen. The respect, who is going to teach respect? In any case, in this country, there is no concept of respect in general these days. What's going to happen?
Well, Sandeep, in BDFA, the referees are scared for their life, are they?
So BDFA, I mean, I think this goes beyond BDFA. Generally, all the referees who do the local division matches, they have a terrible time of it, you know, because they get paid, I think, less than 500 rupees per game. So they can't take this as their main source of income, because it only happens for like 3 months, and then the A divisions probably get paid much lesser than that. So they have to do this. They have to make decisions. They get abused by people. They get pushed on, shouted on, all these kind of things. But like the top-down approach that Chris was talking about, it's interesting because the top division that we have, so a lot of the European players and South Americans especially are very smart. There is a thing called game management. And that's very important in football. And it's not something that Indians are very well versed in, to manage a game. Like our game management when we are defending is to smash the ball, like to straight to the opposition defender so that you can start building again.
Right.
So that's the level of thought goes into the game management here. But the foreigners who come here, they are very smart. Like if you see, this is something I love about Bengaluru FC. They influence the referee a lot. If anything happens, Dimas is right there. Eric's right there. Seran used to be right there. Gallego does this. You know, Edu Bedia does this. The moment something happens, he's right there talking to the referee, saying, look, I did one tackle, he did four over there. Or this is just my first tackle. Why is there a card? You know, just generally talking to them to just input a small doubt in their head so that the next decision might go their way. You know, all these kind of small, small things, it's massive. So the issue is like our referees probably don't have the experience of dealing with the players putting pressure on them. So maybe the education, like Akar said, is so important here, because at the top level, you're dealing with players who have played at a certain height in Europe or wherever they may have been. And they will bring that experience here and our referees can't deal with it. So then the problem comes when it comes down to the lower levels and the people just think you can just go stand in front of the referee's face and shout abuses at him. That's the connection, because top-down approach it has, so it'll come from the top only.
Right.
So
sorry, state of Indian football in simple words. Well, Roy, I think you're happy with the answers that our guys had for your questions. Let's move on. The next question comes from Trevor Pereira. Akarsh, his question is, when will this overinflated Indian football salary bubble going to burst?
Oh, it's actually the COVID times have leveled it off quite decently. It's not affected the top division. It's affected the top division in many ways, actually. The effects are going to be felt for a couple of seasons. There'll be some clubs, obviously, which are immune to all this. But the rest of the clubs won't be. And we already know I-League, the players are getting salaries about 10,000 per month, and they get contracts right from the first day of pre-season to the last day of the season. That's it. That's the window. It's not like a full contract either. It is leveling off. There will be people, there will be players who are going to feel the effects of it, players who aren't. But like I mentioned in the previous pod as well, it should bother people that if an Amrinder can buy a villa or a Gurpreet can buy a villa in Dubai, and an I-League player who's the league from where you scout your players and where players get a lot of time to build to the next stage. In that league, your players are getting 10,000 rupees per month and can barely get by. This ecosystem is not going to work. Like, things need to change. And I also feel that Indian salaries, however much you want to sort of romanticize about it, oh, look at this, look at how commercial this game has become, and look at our Indian players. Earlier, they could barely get by. They had to have two jobs, and now they can earn this much. I mean, certain players who are getting inflated salaries because of their exposure to the under 17 World Cup, or just in general, where they're just getting too much money, and they're getting a little greedy. And eventually they're going to start feeling that I'd rather just get a good payday done rather than play for 10 years. This is going to happen eventually. But who knows when the bubble will burst. Hopefully not anytime soon. Hopefully with the open system or promotion relegation, things will sort of level off. Even teams will start realizing that they can't really afford so much luxury or I mean, I don't know, but COVID has sort of leveled things off in any case. So clubs are feeling the effect of it.
Well, there's a sense of sadness I can make out from Akash's tone there. But Trevor, only thing we can give you right now is a hope that one day things would get better in Indian football.
But you know what? There is a connection here in that now every club, and it's not just Indian football, right? World over, every club treats a big signing like it's a trophy. If you see the way Sanchez to Manchester United, how he was unveiled, it's a video. It's like, this guy is coming. Oh my God, he's going to change everything. You know, all these kind of things. So in India also, they have fallen prey to this. Like the Hooper Eton coming to Kerala Blasters. And then, you know, all these kind of exuberant fact that, oh, we have to pay the highest amount of money to bring Nishu Kumar has come for 5 crore to, you know, Kerala Blasters. Look at the money that he has been given. All credit to Nishu. No problem with him earning how much ever money that he has. But the next left back that they have, Ruatara, I don't know how much he's earning, but definitely not in the crores. And the next guy is Jessel. And apparently they are signing Sanjeev Stalin, who is the under-17 left back, and also Hormipan from Round Glass Punjab. So they are just signing players, and the one marquee player will get all the money. And the ones underneath them, even in the ISL, they're not getting paid as well, although they're getting played significantly more than what an elite player would make. But how long can a club who has to pay the league for, you know, let's say, what, 14 crores, 13 crores, something to the league just to play, then pay all the players, then not have too much money in return from the league or from television unless they qualify for the, you know, top four and then go on to win the title and things. So how long can you sustain that kind of an investment? My biggest fear in Indian football is one day the people who are investing just decides to not do it anymore. You've seen it in I-League with Bharat FC and things like that. Corporate entries who come, put money, then realize that it's not going to give any dividends anytime soon. And then pull the plug and move on. At some point, we've already seen two clubs shut down in the ISL. And they've been propped up by some maverick magic work that FSDL has managed to do. But at the end of the day, if there is no long-term dividends, even long-term dividends, not even in the next 5-10 years, the people investing money is going to stop. And then where do we go? The old legacy clubs are probably there, but not able to pay that kind of money. And then the players, their ratings are very high. And this also ruins another thing. The Indian players get paid a lot more in India than they would if they go outside. So that takes I feel like that's not equal, right? Generally, when you go out of a country, you're supposed to get paid more. So yeah, it just feels very strange, the whole market. And my biggest thing is, 1 year out and Sandeep Singh returns, they give him a pay rise. I've never heard this thing in any part of any world other than Manchester City or Manchester United, because they can do all this kind of nonsense.
Well, that's the state of affairs in Indian football, guys. Moving on from that question from Trevor Pereira, the next one comes from Navid Sandeep. How true are the rumors about an exodus of BFC players? Is there an exodus of BFC players?
So there will be a few people moving, but I don't think there will be an exodus, because a lot of their foreigners were anyway on 1 year notice and one year contract, and some of them have left already. So they'll obviously replace them. But again, 3+1 rule this time around. So probably get one less foreigner. I think Rahul Beke is an open secret now that he's moving to Mumbai. Everywhere people are talking about it. It looks like a done deal. So there will be few changes. Suresh was also linked to East Bengal, but I don't think that's happening, although they're offering some crazy money. But again, I don't think he'll leave from what I've heard and what I've heard conversations and things. But yeah, mass exodus probably not. I mean, they are not. BFC are not in that kind of a situation where they need to completely rebuild. They just need to add a few things here and there. Maybe a couple of good Indian players here, a couple of good foreign, one good striker and one good midfielder. I think Dimas might be at the end of his time in BFC. Probably need an upgrade over there. think that's pretty much all they need once Yonan comes back. I think they'll be sorted. They need a center half, an Indian center half, upgrade on Pratik Chaudhary. So yeah, these kind of things. They don't really need to have a main, like, you know, complete overhaul. And to be fair, right, I've seen their second division team. There are players in there who people may not have seen in, even in this ISL, like Biswa Darji, who was, I think, injured. He can do a really good thing. Ajay Chetri is a good player who can always come in, and if he gets a run of games, you can see that he'll take over that Indian midfield role alongside Suresh. And they have Shiv Shakti, who's now scoring a lot of goals in BDFA division. And we have to see if he can convert that at a higher level as, you know, as he climbs up the level. So the question is, will they get chance? I'm not sure, but there is no dearth of talent in that team also. They have quite a decent team in the second division team also coming up.
All right, there. Well, addressing the open secret slog here, Rahul Beke coming to Mumbai FC, a much needed signing for them. How do you see the team going with their business in the coming season?
Okay, so from what I know, there's, I think, two sides of things. One is that the CFG board really wants more Mumbai-centric players. You know, we saw the signing of Farooq Chaudhary. We're seeing Rahul Beke coming in. Ashutosh Mehta was also linked, you know. So there is that Mumbai connection that the club wants to build, that you have like a more reached 11. What I'm thinking about are the consequences mainly. I'm not sure if Rakib will stay, and I don't know how to feel about that because I really, really like him. Amir Anaude, as it stands, is on a one-year contract, but I think he will extend, not just because Lobera likes him, but he's had like a pretty good season. So he's someone who can stay. The thing about Rahul Beke is that because of the 3+1 rule coming in also, he could shift in as a centre-back. And because we lost out on Sarthak Golui and we didn't replace him, and Valpuria's contract is ending at the end of the season, it kind of makes sense to go for a defender who can slot it both at right-back and centre-back. And, you know, Sarthak and Valpuria could do those things. So, it does make sense. I'm, again, not exactly sure about how many minutes he'll get in the system. But it's a welcome signing overall. It adds depth, it adds strength to the team.
Well, brighter days for Mumbai City FC, a team that just won a double in the Indian Super League. Sandeep, coming to you back again with another question from Navid. Four foreigners for BFC going into the AFC playoffs. Is Parthalu past his prime?
Who are the four? So, Eric is there, Dimas is there, and they've signed a new defender as well. Mm-hmm. So, these three. A couple of people have asked me about Clayton, whether he's here or not. And honestly, I don't know the answer. But he has a contract till May 31st. So, I assume they would use him because, like, I agree with Akarsh, what he said earlier. He was their best player. You can make a very strong case that he was their best player because it's not just what he does on the ball, it's what he does off the ball as well. His movement is very, very intelligent. The spatial awareness and all are very intelligent, which will be very useful at an Asian level, more than maybe in an ISL level as well. And Parthalu, so last year he had an amazing season, which rewarded him with a 2-year contract. And this year we've seen a little bit of a dip. But is that because of everything around him was also not at the same level? That could be a reason. And he is not scoring as many goals because this time BFC didn't score as many goals, especially from set pieces where he was a big threat. But having said that, he's past his prime would be difficult to say because I think he has another year in him easily. And I do really like him as a person also because more than football is not just about, it's a large part, it's about what happens on the field. But Parthalu off the field is a big voice in the dressing room. He's a leader. So they need him. He's one of the main big guys in that team who can lead the team by example because he works very, very hard. And he makes sure that the people around him work hard. And Suresh has improved a lot. Like when he came in, Parthalu took him under his wing along with Dimas and they worked very hard, especially on the long balls that Suresh wanted to learn. And Parthalu was sort of helping him out with that from the beginning. And it paid dividends. I think Deshaun Brown scored against Kerala Blasters from a long ball that Suresh had given at the end of last season. So he is a big influence in the team. So another year, I think, is absolutely worth having Parthalu around. I don't think it's going to be detrimental at all.
All right, that about the BFC foreigners. But Akarsh, coming to you with the Indians in that team. Navid has another question, and his question is, do you think Bengaluru FC is trying to focus on their academy and reserves instead of competing with other clubs for players on transfer?
They might be forced to, but it won't be too bad a thing. It would probably be good for them in the longer run. Let's see. I mean, Parth Jindal wasn't shy of saying that BFC's academy is the best in Asia. Nobody called him out for that. So, yeah, on Twitter, he once replied to Mihir, who's the Indian Express journalist, who had written something about academies and grassroots in the ISL. And Parth replied saying, this is the best academy in Asia.
Infrastructure-wise, I think he's right.
Yeah, so let's see if it produces players. It should, but maybe it's just too early. But I still think they will have enough good Indians to... They need a philosophy again. They need a system where you fit in, right? I mean, clubs like Chennai City didn't have mind-blowing players, but they had a system and they played the best damn football in India that season, maybe except for FC Goa. So you can play damn good football. You can see that in Aizawl as well in the I-League, right? You have basically a Santosh Trophy team with one foreigner. You can play great football with the lesser known talents, and maybe Bengaluru FC can pivot to that.
I mean, the earlier philosophy was to get players and then develop them, and then they would go on to represent the national team, right? And they had a coaching staff who were able to do that, which I think subsequently has not really happened as much. So reverting back to that would be perfect. And with people like Mandar and running the club behind, he has a lot of connections. He will know who are the good players. And I think if they scout them right, no, they can probably get that. Maybe, I don't know who is the assistant coach coming this year. So if we get the right coaching staff, I think they can do a wonders with that B team, because that B team is quite good.
Musa leaving?
No, I mean the foreign assistant. Okay, I was thinking. Sorry. Musa, no. So yeah, there is something interesting. Okay, so I spoke to Mandar the other day, and he was talking about, so I was asking him about Indian coaches and if PFC would be interested in giving a chance to an Indian coach at some point, because by the time I spoke to him, they had already hired Marco. So Marco, who's born in Germany and has connections to Italy, and his mother is Dutch. So football philosophy wise, he's like well-rounded in that sense. Yeah. So
Indian coach.
Yeah. Full proper globalization type coach. Mm-hmm. So he said one of the main reasons, like, Musa was given such a long time here and they didn't try to change him at all, is so that he gets the experience coaching in the ISL. And so that when he goes back to the B team, he's aware of the demands of the top division league and what the players should be ready for. And he can prepare them in such a manner that the transition to the first team is easier, which is a very interesting way of looking at it. Because, you know, we have a guy who knows, who had around 10 games in the I-League, in the ISL, and knows, okay. And he's, one of the good things and bad things about Musa is he's very honest. So he has said a lot of things like, these players are not ready, or they'll take some more time to be ready. He said, I myself will take a couple more years to be ready to coach at this level. But he knows what it takes now. So he'll go down and he'll incorporate that into the youth systems. And hopefully in a couple of years, or maybe another 5 years, let's say, they will be able to produce consistently the players that they need to, you know, start indirectly or much easier to the highest level.
It sounds like a pretty promising decision, if you think about it, you know. Like, yeah. This season was more or less over when Carlos left. So they say, you know, forsake it. Focus on this new thing where you're going to go for more academy-based players, value for money kind of thing.
Well, Navid, I hope you're happy with the answers that our guys had for you. Moving on, the next question comes from a very interesting Twitter handle. It goes by the name Harvard versus Hard Work, and the Twitter handle is @Turmurtu. And the question is for Shlok, and I'm pretty sure you'll be very happy with this question. Shlok, is Bipin Singh the best goddamn winger in the country today?
I don't care if I'm right or wrong. I'm just going to say yes. Yes. I just don't care. He just is, man. I mean, to go ahead and do what he did in the final in like the most Aguero-esque fashion. It's just...
Hey, come on, dude.
Dude, 90th minute. Okay. And it was not an easy finish. It deserves the hype.
Aguero, come on.
Yeah, Ari, the timing and everything. It's just like phenomenal.
But, Shoghi's not buying any other argument.
Ah, yeah. Vipin is the best, bro. Like, propaganda chalo. That's it.
Well, Howard versus hard work, that's the answer for you. I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but that's what Shlok has for you guys. Moving on.
I'm trying to recollect which other wingers are doing well.
Me also. I'm also thinking of the same thing. Who was that winger in Churchill Brothers?
Sorry?
Churchill Brothers had that winger, no?
Brian.
Miranda.
Bryce Miranda.
Bryce Miranda. No, yeah, he's not like a...
No, no, but I-League, you can't compare with an ISL.
I'm just thinking of random names that people wouldn't have heard of. Like, everybody talks about Halicher and we'll talk about Jerry Liston and all these people. Yeah. So, I'm trying to think outside. Who is there with an outside chance?
This is your cool wala wo ki. I do this with a song. There's a song called Lifehouse Ka Hanging By A Moment. So I know that. I don't listen to any music, but whenever somebody says that, I'm like, my favorite song is Hanging My Moment, just to sound cool. It is actually, and people don't know about it. So it's good.
Indian football already is like a super hip thing. Uske upar, you all just like keep going down. Like,
no, but I actually do like Bryce Miranda, to be fair. Yeah. But yeah.
It just gets more and more obscure, man. It's just like...
Well, I need to stop laughing for a minute.
No, he's right. Bryce Miranda has got the eyeballs in the I-League.
Yeah.
Arota Gurkirat has also got the eyeballs in the I-League.
Emil Benny also has got the eyeballs.
Emil Benny, but he's not a winger, right? He's not playing in that position.
There's a chance that he might be in BSC next year. I feel. In my heart, I feel. Okay, nobody told me anything. But in my heart, I feel like there's
cool. I'm sure he's going to progress into a great attacker at BFC like others have. But anyway,
I got it.
I was just trying to recollect who are the wingers, because our wingers are essentially strikers who are playing on the wings. You have Liston, you have Narzari, right? How do you pronounce it?
Narzari.
I won't rate him because for 10 years he hasn't done much. He's suddenly gone into the net. It's not going to work out anyway.
That too, like for half a season.
Yeah, that too for half a season. And Yasir is somebody...
Manveer. Manveer is playing as a right guy.
Manveer is playing as a winger. Prabir plays as a right wing or right back. And he's exciting. But Susai was playing as a winger. It's very hard to judge who's the best winger. I think Bipin definitely is the best right now in terms of what he's doing. So much depends on the quality of on the style of play these clubs
are playing. Yeah.
For instance, I know everybody's excited about Hyderabad FC. He's 6 Hyderabad FC players going into the national team. But when you have to defend against a Qatar for 90 minutes, I don't know how that's going to be pull off.
It's largely affected by someone like Aridane. He's a very
central figure. He helps
everyone around him. You know, like he makes everyone else also look better than they actually could be.
Yeah, even at Northeast United, who was the winger? I think Machado was playing there. Nintoy was on the other side. Sometimes
Rocher Sella was there.
Rocher Sella was there. Yeah.
VP Sofair.
Left wing pick one.
Chara to wahi hai. So the one you just mentioned. So aside from that, Kerala Blasters or Rahul KP, Sahal was on the left wing, but obviously he's not a winger. And who else? We probably should have researched before the pod, but okay.
But like Bipin Singh, to the answer is given. He is now being,
And that is true. Bipin Singh stands out with his winger qualities and his performance right now. Definitely. And even Brandon was also playing on the left wing. There's so many players who were technically not wingers, but flanks. So from a winger point of view, then
Jesuraj is also playing right winger. No, he is a right midfielder.
He's a right winger only, I think.
Right winger, Omar is also,
Interesting. Country of wingers and wingbacks.
Yeah.
country of goalkeepers and people who do not play down the center because the spine is always foreign in every team.
Country of right wingers.
Absolutely.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well played.
That's my controversial comment. Good night.
Well, since we are talking about hippie things, the next question also is a bit hippie. Comes from Nadeem. Akash, this is for you. Thoughts on the I-League fixtures? Monday 2 p.m. instead of a Sunday 2 p.m. or all championship group matches are the same? Same day with a 1.5 GB data pack.
Yeah. But this has been a trend for ages. When people wanted to murder the I-League, it was ridiculous. I have gone to Ludhiana for a final day, incredible showdown with three simultaneous matches between four teams who could win the title on Thursday at 2 p.m. on a work day. I've traveled there taking an off just to witness the final day when Minerva won it. The final showdown was on a Thursday at 2 p.m. I mean, how blatantly can you sort of mismanage a league and sort of try and say that you haven't really done it deliberately? And in any case, I think I also did one article one day that the number of matches that were at 2 p.m. and sometimes it was forced because some of the grounds did not have floodlights. But even those matches could have been on a Saturday, Sunday. But eventually, right now, it doesn't matter because I-League doesn't have viewership. You've not promoted it. You can do it at any time. People won't be watching. Unfortunately, that's the reality of the league. But this time, actually, what they've done is they've tried to... Because this is a hurried season, right? So you're trying to play every 3 days, every 4 days. So it's slightly tough to maintain a Saturday, Sunday, then a Tuesday, Wednesday, and a Saturday, Sunday. Actually, when I think about it, it's not really tough. That's what they do in Europe. So, I agree with you. I mean, I've lost my energy in arguing or in sort of, you know, it's eventually you're like, what is that story of the crying boy, the boy who cries wolf, right? You keep on crying. It's happening. The wolf is always there, but nobody's really watching the wolf anymore. So, yeah, this is 2 p.m. kickoffs are horrendous, and I've only been able to watch it because I'm working from home. So, it's running on the background. Next season, I won't be able to watch so much because it will be bang in the middle of the day and I'll be in office.
So, COVID.
Yeah. So, unless a pandemic variant, a variant from Varanasi or an Ahmedabad comes up and ruins us all.
But Ahmedabad has very high chance, no? Because some 60,000 people were in one place. So.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, back to the topic.
Let's not deviate.
Even when things were not running parallel to ISL, then even then the I-League was, the scheduling was really poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was quite ridiculous. Even a Mohun Bagan and East Bengal, the Calcutta clubs, in an I-League which wasn't running simultaneous to ISL, were very poorly scheduled. It was quite incredible the way it was scheduled. But that's like sort of, it's been 10 years of Reliance. So
that's life if you are an I-League fan or an I-League player, an I-League team, whatever it is. Well, moving on, guys. The next question comes from Ajit Sandeep. This is for you. Let the South Indian in you come out. He wants to know which is the real pseudo South Indian derby in the ISL. Is it KBFC versus Chennai in, or BFC versus Chennai in, or KBFC versus BFC?
Are you asking me?
Yep.
Okay, sorry. In between, I couldn't hear. So, okay.
As the resident South Indian.
Yes, as the resident South Indian, I think I'll... this is very difficult
to
answer.
I hope you don't say Gokulam.
No. What I wonder is why Hyderabad FC is not there, but okay. Anyway, I don't think it would matter anyway. But I would say BFC versus Chennai only, and it's a controversial topic, and only because Sunil Chetri once, while talking, when they just joined ISL, and at that time, Chennai was the team that beat them at home in the final, right? And BFC right. Just walked the league under Roka. They just played everybody out of the park and then got beaten at home in the final. Right. And next season, there was an edge to it. And then he was saying, like, BFC had that similar kind of a rivalry with East Bengal. So he's like, it feels a little similar because there is a little bit of that edge to that fight. While the competition with Kerala Blasters is more in the stands.
Right.
Because Blasters is never in a situation where they're going to challenge BFC for the, you know, top four position or title or whatever. So it's more... I mean, it is... I mean, you whatever said and done, what I said is absolutely true.
Agreed.
And then BFC also, Sunil in another conversation was saying how when they beat them, I think 3-1 or something at home in Kochi in the first season or one of the seasons when Miku was still there. I think he scored 2 goals and Sunil scored 1. And the whole fan base was happy to see a team play well. So they applauded. They were applauding BFC towards the end of the match. And Sunil made it a point to go around the club and, sorry, around the ground and, you know, sort of acknowledge the fans for their support that they have given. Because at the end of the day, they got to see a good team performance. So in that way, I think it's more fiery between fans between Kerala and BFC. But I think rivalry-wise, on-field, I think probably Chennai and then BFC trump it. Because there's also the Chennai, the Tamil Nadu-Karnataka thing as well, right?
Yeah, that's a Kaveri derby, right?
Yeah, I don't want to call it that, dude. It just seems very politically driven and totally unnecessary. Listeners, and I'm going to keep this in the show. Naveen once gave a headline when he put a preview saying Kaveri derby and his boss removed it, saying, what is wrong with you?
I like to live on the edge.
Yeah, but yeah, I would say Chennai and BFC for sure.
Chennai and BFC and
Chennai and BFC is the pseudo derby, you're saying? No.
No, that would be the...
They're all pseudo derbies because it's not a derby.
But that's the most good rivalry between two teams, I think.
Yeah.
So these two. Kerala BFC is in the stands only. And that's good fun in itself. But yeah. On the field, they are nowhere. Maybe when I become TD in Kerala Blasters and we start challenging for the trophy, then maybe there might be some proper rivalry on the field.
Well, you heard it here first.
So interestingly, it's interesting that BFC, who came into the picture, fourth season into ISL, seems to have, you know, because that rivalry is based on success and the might of the team and all that. But otherwise, Kerala versus Chennai should be like the first semi-final. If you remember, ISL inaugural ISL's first semi-final. What an incredible game! If you remember, that was at Sushant Matthew goal, which is still my favorite goal in ISL. They won the first leg. Kerala Blasters won the first leg 3-0, and then Chennai came back to 3-3, and eventually Kerala won in extra time. So I would have thought that that rivalry would be ignited that way. But I also think a lot of the social media demographics also play a role in BFC's rivalry. I mean, those are rivalries which are very, I don't know how to put it. Like, they're very visible. There's great banter. I don't think we look at Kerala versus Chennai with a great banter. So Kerala versus Bengaluru FC, the rivalry came into the picture obviously, because of one errant video by this fool who traveled from Delhi to Bengaluru and was in the stands. I don't know if you know the background to that, right?
No, this is the one in the train.
Which one?
In the metro.
No.
Like there's some metro people
So BFC were singing. BFC were just having a pot shot at Reno Anto and CK Vineet, who were in the stands during an AFC Cup game. And when they were chanting for Vineet and Reno, there's a CK Vineet song. And just before that, they were singing Who the Fuck Are Kerala Blasters? Because Vineet and Anto were leaving BFC to join Kerala. So they were supposed to be Kerala players. So they were just having a pot shot at Who the Fuck
Are Kerala. I think the club let them go. I think we should make it a point that in the draft, the club let them go. They only had come to Sunil and...
So they were singing Who the Fuck Are Kerala Blasters, and some of the Kerala Blasters fans listened to that little 3 seconds in that video, and eventually it went wild, and Kerala social fan forums and everything were disgusted by the use of the word, the F word, and it suddenly blew up.
CEO as well, no?
Sorry?
Even the CEO of Kerala Blasters. He put out that whole statement.
Not just the CEO. CK Vineet and Reno Anto had to put out statement. Reno Anto pretended that he was disgusted while he was dancing in the video with that song.
Because his song is 1, Reno 2, Reno 3, Reno Anto. That's his song.
No, it's not that song. But the CK Vineet song. That CK Vineet. He's Reno Anto's man. He hates Mohan Bagan. that song. So that was the song, and everybody was dancing. And just before that was the finishing lines of the Who the Fuck Are Kerala Blasters. So that got recorded in the video, and it flew on Kerala forums. And then Vineet had a lot of statement. Vineet is obviously a very progressive person. So he's like, chill, yeah, guys, it was only banter. That was his statement. But Reno Anto really appeased the Kerala fans and said, I'm disgusted by this and all that. All that, he used strong language. This shouldn't have been said. This was poor behavior, etc., something along those lines. So it became a huge case, and that's where even before Kerala Blasters and Bengaluru FC started, they were never in the same league. They never faced a match, which is why I funnily call it a fan forum derby. Whoever follows me on Twitter, I always, this is a fan forum derby day whenever I realize it's Kerala versus Bengaluru FC, because it started with fan forums. Whereas a Chennaiyan versus Bengaluru rivalry started in the ground. I was also there in that final, the ISL 2018 final. And so when Chennaiyan beat Bengaluru FC in Kantira, by the way, it's the anniversary of that today. So if you see today's Twitter on March 17th, it's always on this day in 2018, Chennaiyan FC fans are saying we conquered Kantirwa, and Bengaluru FC fans are saying on this day in 2019, we conquered the Goa FC Goa in Mumbai. So they all, both of them have their days on March 17th, just FYI. So when Chennaiyan FC beat Bengaluru FC, they dropped the most brilliantly timed banner at the Kantirwa, a huge banner right at the final whistle. Everything that you have built will fall, right in front of the West Block.
I remember that.
That was a brilliant banner, even though it was a heartache for me as well, because I was in the West Block and I really wanted Bengaluru FC to win, and there were tears around me everywhere. But that banner was so brilliantly timed, and even the West Block appreciated it. But the next season when Bengaluru FC beat Chennaiyan FC, so they also released the same banner, something along the lines of, I don't remember the exact lines, but something along the lines, you have to build something for it to fall. So they were like, you've not built anything, so nothing is going to fall. That was sort of their reply. It was a very witty reply as well. So there is a, and plus Amoy Ghoshal is also their CEO, is also a central figure in apparently throwing out middle fingers and all that. You're right, Bengaluru FC versus Chennaiyan FC feels like a more authentic rivalry. And maybe primarily because Kerala Blasters is sort of a mockery of a club right now in itself. So maybe once they get serious and once they hit the right notes in terms of football structure and football team and start challenging for trophies, it'll really hit off. But I do think Kerala, any rivalry with Kerala Blasters has a bigger potential to sort of bloom into something in the future.
Maybe Kerala can have a rivalry with Hyderabad.
Yeah, the yellow
derby.
The Dortmund of India versus the Dortmund Partners Derby.
Well, that's the answer for the question, which is on Southern Derby. Next one, Akarsh, again from Ajit. This was regarding some AFC Champions League regulations. I'm just reading out the question. AFC Champions League regulations mandates 27 games a season. League plus domestic club plus grand final, you name it, and everything included, a team needs to play 27 matches. So does this mean the next season we will be seeing Super Cup back to have these 27 matches?
Yeah, definitely. There will be a cup competition. I think this is already in the sort of news these days. Funny enough, everything is forced here. They're going to sort of revive the Super Cup and they're going to play it like, oh, wow, we are reviving it. But again, everything that happens in Indian football is so forced that you're forced to play more matches because you need that to fulfill that eligibility criteria for AFC Champions League. Nothing happens on its own. It's always sort of somebody from FIFA or the AFC have sort of forced our hand to doing something which is positive for Indian football. You wouldn't think about doing it on your own. But I think there were a couple of rumors, right? I don't know if it's substantiated, but one was that you can have three rounds of leagues, something like in a...
Yeah, that was actually probably going to happen next year.
So that was one. The other was that a team can expand and you can keep for the same number of rounds, the home and away. And because in general, the integrity of the competition goes for a toss if there are three rounds, right? One of the teams are going to play the other twice, home and one away.
So but,
that evens out over 2 years.
Exactly. They were going to do it like how they do it in the NBA or something.
It evens out over 2 years, but I'm just thinking about from the same year, wala. It doesn't make sense. It's not even, right? Maybe the Super Cup is that platform, but if Super Cup, then it means the Super Cup has to have a group stage or a proper, you know, because then teams will have to play a minimum of. But even after that, they can't play 5 matches, right? Or they can actually. So you will have let's assume there's another team in ISL next season. So you have 12, then you play 22 matches home and away. And then the winner goes into the Champions League, but the winner will also play the semi final.
And so plus 2 to hoga.
Plus 2 to hoga, 24.
But every team has to play, Tanisha. So for that, they need to ensure.
Oh, is that so?
No. Yeah. How can every team play 27? No
qualifying chance. Team, right?
Qualifying team will have to play 27.
So they can't. No, that's not the thing. No, the league, I mean, the number of games has to be 27, right?
Maybe it's for the league, actually. I remember Praful Patel's statement, which says, ISL will have to play a minimum of 27 games. I don't remember if
that's... I mean, that's the only thing that I'm going by. But
Marcus had also said, right? I think Marcus had also said 27 games minimum, but he didn't specify club or league or what. Like,
the plan before COVID hit for the season that just concluded was to have Super Cup as like a preseason tournament.
Right.
And then come into a 3-round ISL. Which at that time had 10 teams. So 18 plus another...
9 into 3 basically.
Yeah.
So 27 in itself. Okay, got it.
Yeah, so that was the plan that they were going with. And Super Cup...
came into the picture.
So, if I may, from what I heard, some clubs aren't very happy with the 3-round format. They would rather have like another club come into the mix. But again, the thing is, another club coming into the mix does not ensure 27 games in the league itself, right?
Yeah.
So
they have to play a cup tournament. Then Super Cup is
exactly.
happening, I think, in August. August is the date, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so it's before season. It's before the season. August. Yeah.
Yeah.
So probably group it's stages. Yeah.
So I think longer season next year, which is good. Because, a lot of the time for this podcast, there is nothing to talk about during off-season. Until last year when the transfers became like a major thing in Indian football, before that nobody really cared, right? Until they announced
this guy. Sandeep has a real-life problem,
It's a legit issue, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, with that legit issue, let's just move on.
And I'll tell you this also. So last year...
Let me move on.
No. Last year, I tried to make sure that this was going on consistently in spite of a long period when there was no football. And what I noticed is in the beginning, when I was doing interviews with players and coaches and things, there was a lot of interest. A lot of people were watching. A lot of people were listening.
Yeah.
There was all these kind of things. But 2 months or a month, whatever, removed from the ISL final, which was like the crescendo that hit, then nobody cared. Then I'm doing interviews. I did some really good ones and nobody really listened to it. So then I stopped for a brief period. I was like, there's no point because all this good content is going to waste. So I'll put it on later towards closer to the season.
Yeah.
So it becomes a problem that way also.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.